actually exist in a physical universe, and this gets into a little more depth, but so there's a guy named Minkowski back in 1908 that really helped Einstein by creating a frame for that he called space-time. And he said that space-time is a fabric that consists of three dimensions plus time as the fourth dimension. Well, what I'm stating here is that time is not a dimension, it's an illusion. Mass is the fourth dimension, not time. So math is not just mass is not just a characteristic of matter, it's a dimension. And that's gonna startle a few scientists. So mass is a dimension that's a required quantity to exist in a physical universe. The problem with a hologram is it doesn't have any mass.
Are you ready to take control of your health in today's toxic world? Look no further. Masterpiece is here, setting the gold standard for holistic detoxification. Masterpiece, the natural master binder, features nano-sized zeolites combined with marine plasma nutrition. And here's the groundbreaking news. In initial trial results, users have experienced an astonishing 80% removal of toxins after just 60 days of use. Say goodbye to forever chemicals and heavy metals. Masterpiece is a game changer, efficiently capturing graphene oxide, arsenic, mercury, and over 85 other heavy metals. Not to mention it tackles forever chemicals like microplastics and PFAS, a group of over 4,700 man-made chemicals lurking in everyday products. Users are reporting incredible benefits, more energy, heightened mental clarity, and better sleep. One user happily explained, "The mental fog is just gone." And the best part, Masterpiece is affordable. For just $52.99, you get a 2-month supply that can transform your life. Visit sarahwestall.com under shop or click the link below to grab yours today. Don't keep this breakthrough to yourself. Spread the word to family and friends. Masterpiece is not just a product, it's a life changer. Act fast and get yours today at sarahwestall.com or with the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Richard Lighthouse coming back to the program. I've been really looking forward to this conversation, and it's really not a, well, it's a combination of he's going to give a presentation at the beginning, and then I ask questions, and it turns more into a conversation at the end. And you're going to have to hold on to your hats, because this is going to be over the top. We're going to be talking about the technology, the mathematics and physics behind all this new technology that's going to be coming, and what he expects going to be coming. And also we get into a little bit of history and some things that have happened in today's world that he's pointing to. It's called the end of time, but it's not the end of the world. It's the end of our understanding of how the world works and the beginning of something new. And it doesn't necessarily have to be scary, although some of it is, because this is pretty advanced technology that they have, and we've seen some of it in action already. We're going to be talking at the very end. If you stick around, we're going to be talking about scalar waves. To me, that is amazing. It is faster than the speed of light. It's a communication that it can instantaneously communicate across the universe, essentially. And then we're going to talk about some of the technology that likely how the pyramids were constructed, and also anti-aging and reverse aging and accelerated aging. And he shows how that's used in practical means. And then we're going to talk about what time travel is, what parallel universes really are. It's really not parallel universes as much as just different periods of time. Maybe there's I don't know. We didn't get into that. We got into time travel and what that means and how that is different periods that you can go to and how that works. Are they working on it? And this is a phenomenal this is interesting. I don't know if everything is, I do not know if everything he's saying is right. Obviously, when you listen to this, it's so obvious that I don't have enough of a grasp of it to say whether what he's saying is 100% right or not. But it's more advanced physics, it's more advanced mathematics than what you're going to see in any university around the world. And it's where things are going. It's where the advanced labs are going. It's where DARPA, it's where HARP, it's where MIT, it's where the most advanced places in the world are going. And even it's probably more advanced than where a lot of these places are right now. They're all working on it. And or segments, dark black segments are working on it. Very, very interesting. And I think in some ways it's hopeful, and we'll talk at the end on, while it's very scary, it's also, it tells me that because of how advanced some of this is, it tells me that the bad guys who are really trying to do bad stuff don't have 100% access to this for some reason. And I don't understand. I have more questions than I have answers when I start looking into this technology. And that is, I think most of you will too. It's over the top for sure, but it's real. And it's going to change our world, and it's going to change our world in the most fundamental ways that many of you have never even thought about. Okay, before I get into that, I want to talk to you about Ion Mitchell's new MitoCure Rx, which is based on methylene blue. And what you'll see is that, well, the reason why he created this is because he was working with different people that were selling methylene blue, and he liked the product, but he's like, well, it's only temporary. It really does give you more energy in your cell. Methylene blue really does help because it goes right into your cell, gives you a boost of energy. Like caffeine is, you're still tired, but it masks it, makes you feel like you have more energy, but you really don't. It's like masking the symptoms. Methylene blue goes into your cell and gives you that boost of energy, so you feel like you really do have more energy, but it's temporary. After it wears off, after that dissipates, you don't have the energy anymore. And so what he said is, well, you gotta fix that, because then people are gonna be addicted to this forever in order to feel that way. And so what he did is he created a way to get your mitochondria to turn over. And so as you use this product, the methylene blue will give you the energy, but the mitochondria turnover, you'll be creating healthier cells in that process that actually have more energy. And so this is the product. The point of it is so that you won't be addicted to it forever in order to feel good. You can use it for a few months. You can feel you really are feeling better. And maybe you get to a point where you don't have to use it at all, or you use it as a maintenance here and there. And so you're getting that boost of energy with the methylene blue, and then you're also getting the benefit of really getting your cells to be healthier. So it's a combination. We wanted to fix that addictive nature of wanting to, that addictive nature where the only way you can have more energy is by taking the product forever. That just doesn't feel like the right thing to do. You want to get to the source of the problem. So I love this. And you can try it for yourself. It's less expensive than people are saying. It's expensive, I want to be fair, but it also is something that you don't have to use forever in order to feel that way. So, but it's less expensive than what the methylene blue is that people are selling it for, which is also what I like. It's hard because the source products are the source ingredients are expensive, and there's not much you can do about it. But he's pricing it below just what methylene blue is, but it has an additional elements in it to make it better. So I will have the link below so where you can buy if you're interested or learn more about it, or you can go to sarahwestell.com under shop and you can find it there as well. Okay, let's get into this really fascinating discussion with Richard Lighthouse. Hi, Richard. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Sarah. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this is the second time I've had you on, but since I had you on the first time, I learned about some of your work and I said, oh my God, I got to get this guy on. And I think people are going to be really impressed and maybe confused to a certain degree and just really intrigued, and they're going to want to know more. You're going to give a presentation that'll last about 15 minutes, and then we're going to talk about it. What is your presentation going to be on?
So I have a little short presentation with some video clips to help folks better understand it. But the title of my presentation is called The End of Time. And I have to precede that by explaining why it's so important. And in my opinion, it is the most disruptive, earth-shattering event in all of human history. That's a pretty bold statement. So I hope to explain where that comes from and provide some compelling evidence for folks to think about.
Okay, well, excellent. You get started and
Okay.
we'll watch this, and then I'll have questions.
Okay. All right. So the title is The End of Time. And as I mentioned, I believe this is probably the most disruptive event in all of human history, and I make that assessment based on the effect that we'll have on our entire global population in a very short period of time. So let me just continue from there. So, and I can appreciate people's skepticism. I'm going to provide some compelling evidence in video clips. The technology that will come about or fall about from this new understanding of the nature of time will include time travel, faster than light travel, travel to parallel universes, reverse aging, and life extension to 300 years or more. These are pretty bold claims, and I hope that I can provide you compelling evidence that this is very real and it's already happening.
Wow, okay.
All of science and all religions all over the world will be affected by this new information. It's that profound. Let me cover just a little bit about me. I have a master's degree in mechanical engineering from Stanford. I've previously worked for NASA. And there are two websites where you can download many of my technical papers and ebooks for free at rlighthouse.com and academia.edu. Let me introduce it by saying you're going to want to buckle up. This next slide is a doozy. So our entire universe literally blinks off and on more than 1 trillion times each second. This can be just demonstrated experimentally. And the proof is in the pudding because the US Space Force and the US Air Force are already operating weapons based on this scientific principle. That's how much proof there is. Sequential time is an illusion that only exists in our minds, and it's the mechanism for the zero point. If you've been reading scientific papers for the last 20 years, there's often references to the zero point, and nobody can explain exactly what it is. This is what it is. It's because our universe expands and then contracts back to a single point, and it does it more than 1 trillion times each second. This is a staggering number. I've provided in the bottom left-hand corner here the actual calculation that was used, and I need to defer to the person that provided me this calculation. He is a professor of physics at the University of California at Santa Barbara, and he prefers to remain anonymous. It's a controversial subject, and if you're a young professor, I can appreciate why you would want to do that. I provided him with my own calculation back around 2014, and then in 2015. He gave me a more precise calculation. I was off by about 6%, and he provided me with a precise method for making his calculation. So I am grateful for his precise calculation. I should probably explain a little bit. So these terms that you'll hear me use, the collapsing neutral point, our universe is blinking on and off just like a sine wave. The E point is referred to as the expanding neutral point. It's very key that we understand what happens at each one of these points, because when you synchronize with those points, very interesting things happen. So I did mention some of the benefits that will derive from this. Time travel, I wrote a technical paper on that. Unlimited electricity, I provided technical details about that as well. I have an ebook called Discovery of Parallel Universes. I describe how that technology works, faster than light travel, and reverse aging. And this is just some of the potential benefits for mankind. So I'm going to show you how this is my analogy of how synchronizing with a blinking universe works. So I'm gonna pause here, and you'll watch as the fan blades are rotating. As the fan blades are rotating, as the strobe zeroes in on the exact rhythm and the precise frequency, it makes the blades appear to stop. And that's my analogy of how we can synchronize with a blinking universe, because from the standpoint of the strobe light, the blades aren't moving. So when you synchronize with that precise frequency, the you're at the same rhythm of the universe, and it's like a natural resonant frequency. And by synchronizing with that, there are very specific phenomena that occur at specific points during that open cycle and down. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. It's important for scientists and physicists to understand how the basics of these concepts and how it works. So, what proof is available? So, I did mention that the U.S. Space Force and the U.S. Air Force already have weapons that are operating on these scientific principles. My research found that there was a very key CIA laser scientist that, in the time frame 1992 to 1993, did some very specific work for the CIA. I have since tried to find it again, and it's apparently been hidden. This is an overhead view of the World Trade Center on 9/11, and you can see these round circles. Each one of these round holes was created by a high-powered laser. Each one of these holes is about 30 feet in diameter, and you can see them everywhere through the structure. There's more here. This is what actually took down the building and turned it into dust, and I'm going to demonstrate that in some videos here. So let me pull that up. Okay, this is a short clip from the World Trade Center. I want you to pay attention to this structure right here in the middle. Watch how it turns into dust in 1 second. There's no burning on it. There's no melting on it. It simply turns into dust in midair. If you ask any physicists or scientists, they'll tell you that's absolutely impossible. That structure was more than 700 feet in the air and composed of 2-inch thick steel, structural steel. That's literally impossible, and yet you can watch it happen. So let me gonna do a little bit a closer up view of that so that it's easier to see. Okay, this is a close-up view. This is the structure right here. It's more than 700 feet tall, 2-inch thick steel. And watch how it just turns into dust in midair. There's no melting, there's no flames, no nothing. It just simply turns into dust in midair. Very, very unusual. Let's go back to screen share. There we go. So on the next slide, so we saw in that video too, we saw this 2-inch steel structure. This building right here is the American Express Tower. It's 739 feet tall, and you can see where it is in comparison to that. And we saw this close-up view as well. This is very important because this is from a different perspective. It's from a different angle. You can see these static images, and you can see the same phenomena occurring, and it literally turns into dust in midair. There's no evidence of melting, heating. It doesn't turn bright orange or bright white. It just turns into dust. So I did some calculations. I refer to this frequency of 1.1 terahertz as the lighthouse frequency. And you can see the spreadsheet how I've calculated it. And I'm claiming that harmonic number 256, which has a frequency of 281 terahertz, is closely, very closely related to what are called 1064 nanometer YAG lasers. YAG lasers stands for yttrium aluminum garnet. They're also neodymium doped, which is the property of a natural supermagnet. And so these very specific crystals that are used in these lasers have a natural frequency that's very close to our harmonic of the lighthouse frequency. That's why they use this specific laser properties to create this high-powered laser from orbit. So I'm stating very clearly, in my opinion, the U.S. Space Force possesses these weapons that was used on 9/11 to take down the building, in addition to detonation charges that were used in the building. And you can see the 30-foot diameter holes that are there. The U.S. Air Force is using a smaller variant of this, and you'll see this in harmonic number 512. It's the first or the second harmonic of these YAG lasers, And it's used in what are called MQ-9 drones. And they were used to start the wildfires in California and in Greece, and probably in Lahaina, Hawaii as well. So I'm making a very direct accusation of the U.S. Space Force and Air Force that they are using these weapons on civilians.
If you've been following recent developments, you're likely aware of the ongoing transformation in the global economy. The BRICS nations are actively advocating for the replacement of the dollar as the world's reserve currency, and an increasing number of countries are aligning with their efforts. Concurrently, the stability of the Western banking system is facing unprecedented challenges, reaching a level of fragility not seen since the 2008 financial crisis. The reputable Weiss Research Group, known for accurately forecasting bank failures with 99.3% accuracy since 2008, now anticipates a substantial risk of over 4,000 banks facing vulnerabilities, with a fourth of them on the brink of imminent failure. According to their data, all the experts are predicting a major economic collapse more impactful than the crash of 1929. Historically, precious metals have proven to be resilient assets during such economic uncertainties. Now is an opportune moment to consider acquiring gold and silver to safeguard your family's financial well-being. For the most reliable service and the best prices on gold and silver, I recommend Miles Franklin at info@milesfranklin.com. When you contact them, mention Sarah sent me. It ensures you receive the best service and pricing available in the country. That's a guarantee from them to me. Take proactive steps now to secure your assets and protect your loved ones. Contact info@milesfranklin.com and let them know Sarah sent you.
There's a gentleman in Canada named John Hutchinson. He demonstrated starting around the 1980s what he called the Hutchinson effect. And I'm going to show you some images of that, and specifically what happens right here at this collapsing neutral point is called weightlessness, because gravity literally goes to zero. When an object is surrounded by this vibration that's a harmonic of this frequency, it causes gravity to go to zero. And you'll see that weightlessness effect. And you also see the rapid aging effect that occurs right at this E point, the expanding neutral point. And you can witness that in a separate video. So I'm going to show those right now. So this shows an example of the Hutchinson effect when you synchronize with that very specific C point, the collapsing neutral point. You get this effect where gravity goes to zero. He was able to demonstrate it randomly. And so it wasn't very repeatable for him. By combining both radio waves and low-intensity X-rays, he was able to resonate that frequency randomly, and he couldn't predict exactly when it was going to happen. But it shows you it is possible to do. Let me show you what the rapid aging looks like. So on the other side of that sine wave, this is a iron billet. A solid iron billet. And this is not slow motion. This is the actual speed. So you'll see that the frequencies are combining right here in this part of the billet. It's not aging up here, but it's rapidly aging and basically just crushing and collapsing. So the molecules inside there are being rapidly oxidized.
Are you looking at a video right now? Because we can't
yes.
see it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Okay. It's like everything's in slow motion. Okay, so in this screen we see where the rapid aging is occurring at this key point right here, where the frequencies are meeting. The top part of this iron billet is not aging, but the section down here. So the molecules in there are being rapidly oxidized, or rapid aging, and this was the frequency that was used on 9/11 to turn the steel structure and the concrete into dust. Very quickly. So, we saw in those two short videos where you can generate both weightless conditions and rapid aging conditions. The weightless condition occurs at what I call the C point, collapsing neutral point, and the E point, the expanding neutral point, is where you get the rapid aging. So very interesting. And this explains the physics and the phenomena that's been happening with this for many decades that nobody's been able to explain. So let me cover the physics parts because I'm hoping there's a few scientists and mathematicians out there that want to understand this better. So basically, we're dealing with four fundamental forces: strong, weak, gravity, and electromagnetic force. And in our terms, there's a rapidly spinning dial. And if you take the sine, for example, the sine of zero is zero. That's where gravity goes to zero. And electromagnetic force also goes to zero at this point. At this maximum point right here, gravity and the electromagnetic force are at a maximum. And so what we see is all four forces vary from zero up to a maximum value, which is about 1.57 times the known value. For example, gravity is 9.81 meters per second squared. That's a time average value. It's actually constantly varying, but the time average value is 9.81. It varies between zero and about 15.4 meters per second squared at its maximum, and then it rapidly decays back down to zero. So we've got four fundamental forces that are constantly changing in time. And here's the key: they're related by phase angle. The unification of the four fundamental forces, this is a big deal. The unification of the four fundamental forces is that they are related by phase angle and that they are constantly varying. So I hope that scientists are paying attention. Mathematicians, here's the general equation that describes the relationship between the four fundamental forces. Einstein spent the last 30 years of his life trying to solve this. Here's the technical paper where I actually published this originally back in 2013. But I encourage folks to look this up. I've mention Nyquist-Shannon here because to measure these fundamental forces at this speed, you're going to need two times the sample rate, which would be in excess of 2.2 terahertz sampling rate. And this is the part where I say, Dorothy, we're not in Kansas anymore. This is a simple calculation to show what the actual size of the universe is. If we comprehend that our universe is blinking on and off and it collapses to a single point and then expands back out again, how big is that area? And it turns out that if you divide the speed of light by the blinking rate, it's about 1/100th of an inch. That is the maximum size of the universe at any given time. And people are going to go, that's crazy. I can't imagine that. Your physical senses are lovely liars. Distance and sequential time are pure illusion. So I'm going to end my presentation with the beginning. And the beginning goes back to the year 3114 BC. That's a long time ago. 21 December in 2012 has been alternately described as the end of the world. They were expecting cataclysmic events, earthquakes. According to the Mayan calendar, and there's a big deal, it was called the end of the world. A lot of people dismiss it. I agree, that's the wrong translation. The correct translation is the end of time. For a civilization and a culture that worship time, literally plan their entire lives around three different calendars, the end of time would be the end of their culture. That's a significant ending for them. And they knew that it would happen on 21 December 2012. A god by the name of Bolan Yucatay, or the god of numerous strides, was supposed to descend and mark this event. My translation for this god's name is actually the god of time. I think the god of numerous strides was their clever way of wording something. If I said the god of 60 steps, you would know that I was talking about either 60 seconds or 60 minutes. It's their clever wording for the god of time. That's what Bolan Yucatay, really, and a correct translation would be for him. So the real question then is, how did the Mayans know about 21 December 2012? And I'm going to play a little short video here. This is the video that I posted on 21 December 2012. So this is a short. It's about 45 seconds. So I posted this on 21 December 2012. Trying to explain that, in fact, the end of the world was not the correct translation for the Mayan glyphs. The correct translation was the end of time, but that was a huge cultural impact for them. They understood the significance of it. They understood that it would be very disruptive to all of their beliefs and their way of life. But they knew that it would happen on 21 December 2012, which is when I posted this video, and you can look it up. I've provided the link that you can look up the original video, and I posted it right at the peak of the winter solstice. So folks are encouraged to look at that. So let me back up. Here's the video link on YouTube when that video was posted. So this is a quick slide to show that after 2012, I put a lot of effort into developing these ideas and showing all of the inventions and mathematical discoveries that would result. I'm comparing a list of the inventions that I've published with Da Vinci's, and I'm comparing the list of mathematical derivations that I've produced, and I'm putting that next to Einstein's best work. This is freely available at ourlighthouse.com and on academia.edu. So when you understand that the entire universe is literally 1/100th of an inch in size, and that our own vision is pure illusion, that's where I came up with this quote: "There is no outside, everything is inside. It's only occurring in your mind. It's not physical and it's not real. What we perceive to be the physical universe is a temporary illusion that lasts for 1/trillionth of a second." If that doesn't give you pause to think, I don't know what will. The good news is it's going to result in some amazing discoveries and inventions that will soon be rolling out, some of which have already unfortunately been turned into weapon systems. But I encourage folks to read these. You can send me questions, and you can look up on these websites for more information.
Okay, that was. Have a lot of questions here. Okay. So, what practically, when they said it was the end of time, what do they mean it was the end? Their calendar ended that at that point, but what in their mind, why did they say that's the end of time? I'm missing the point of why the Mayans knew. Did they understand that at this point we would start understanding this technology? Or what was it that they were trying to point to?
I think they understood that someone would come along and announce the true nature of time. I think that's what they understood. Although they didn't understand what that would be, they knew that it would occur on that date. And how that, I cannot explain how they knew that. I knew months in advance, and I had plenty of time to prepare a little video because I wanted to mark that date. Because I felt like I did have a good understanding of the true nature of time, and it was certainly not well something that's well known. So I marked that date and time, and it coincidentally occurred at the same time as these Mayan predictions. So I think there's clearly a misunderstanding in the archaeology community about the correct translations for some of these terms, but I've given you my opinion of what I think they are. The correct translation was the end of time, not the end of the world. And the true name for Bolan Yukte, their god, is not the god of numerous steps. It's the god of time. That's his translation in our terms.
Wow,
So
okay.
it's amazing that they had to plan that from the year 3114 BC. How would you know that?
Well, are there other people? It's really interesting. Are there other people alive that understand this? I would assume there are now with your work that came out, but you also had a physics genius that helped you with these calculations. So are there is this becoming more understood within NASA, DARPA? You know, some of these other areas, Stanford, MIT.
Yes and no, and I think the professor that provided me a precise calculation, and he didn't say this. I simply interpreted it because he stopped communicating with me. That he was a young professor, he's looking for funding, and this is way too controversial for somebody that needs to get funding from the National Science Foundation or Department of Energy. And he didn't want to deal with that controversy, so he just gracefully exited. But you can see how it poses problems for scientists in the physics community, they're not allowed to think very far outside of the box. It's just not
That's
allowed.
true. That's very true. You can't.
I had an interesting conversation a few years ago with a professor, and I'm not going to mention his name, but he was near retirement. He had spent 40 years as a he was now a professor emeritus in the physics department, and he had worked for DARPA for 40 years. And he said, "We have been working on this problem for more than 40 years." And they incentivized all of these professors and contractors to come up with a solution, any possible solution that they could experiment or test on, and you would be handsomely rewarded. And he said, "Every year I worked on that." He was not able to solve it, but when he read my paper, he was absolutely floored. He downloaded every single document on my website.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Then I talked to him on the phone, and he was pretty excited. But anyway, I think it showed, and certainly you're comfortable when you're near the end of your career. You don't care what anybody thinks anymore. You're fixing to retire. But so I think that's the difference between scientists that are going to be open-minded to some of these ideas and the ones that you still got to toe the line and stay inside the box.
You got to stay in that window, Overton window is really meaningful. It really means something. So is this the definition? Is this the mathematical proof that we live in a hologram universe, a matrix?
I've had that question before. I don't think it is. I don't think it's a hologram. It is very real, but that reality only lasts for one trillionth of a second. But by our definition of an analog universe, it's an illusion. If something it only lasts for one trillionth of a second, you can't call that reality.
So
But we certainly do.
is it a different understanding of what it means to be in a hologram? It's not a simple computer hologram. It's more of this is the physics behind it, but it's still maybe because we know that everything is frequency, and everything has a frequency, and that ma so it seems to me that everything is mathematical, and then I don't know. It seems to me this is a different way of looking at or describing it to be a hologram. Not the computer way, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. So, the different a hologram is to actually exist in a physical universe, and this gets into a little more depth. But so there's a guy named Minkowski back in 1908 that really helped Einstein by creating a frame for that he called space-time, and he said that space-time is a fabric that consists of three dimensions plus time as the fourth dimension. Well, what I'm stating here is that time is not a dimension, it's an illusion. Mass is the fourth dimension, not time. So math is not just mass is not just a characteristic of matter, it's a dimension. And that's gonna startle a few scientists. So mass is a dimension that's a required quantity to exist in a physical universe. The problem with a hologram is it doesn't have any mass.
I see.
It's composed of photons that are essentially massless. If it's not zero, it's very close to zero. And so photons are not there's not enough mass there to reside in a physical universe, in my opinion. So a hologram can have three dimensions, but because the photons are essentially massless, there's nothing there that makes it real. And we
So
recognize that. People look at a hologram and go, "Yeah, it's a nice three-dimensional image, but it's not real."
that's right. Yeah. So there's more to it. That's why I was saying it's a metaphor, but it's not quite accurate because it is a math matrix, but because there's mass, it's not the hologram metaphor isn't totally accurate. It's missing a dimension to it, but it's still a math matrix.
Yes, I would agree. I'd agree.
Okay. And then the other question I have a lot. I mean, I'm not going to remotely be able to get through all the questions, and I hope people are keeping along here. The weightlessness. You showed that,
Right.
and if you can be, he was arbitrary. He wasn't able to control it, right? But if you have the ability to control it, is that what we're looking at? How they made the pyramids and some of these massive structures in the past that we still don't know how they could lift something the size of a football field, those kinds of things.
Yes, I would absolutely agree. So if you had a device that could emit that specific frequency, synchronize it with that point in the blinking universe, then yes, you could make a 2-ton or 4-ton stone block float up in the air like a balloon. You would have to tie a rope around it and just walk it up the pyramid. And I do
Yes.
agree that that's my opinion of how it was actually built. It wasn't built with slave labor and elephants pulling on rolling
Sticks
logs
and
and stuff like that.
stones.
Now
That's
they used devices that made the stones essentially weightless and tied a rope around and it floated up like a balloon and they just walked it up the pyramid,
it's
set it into
amazing
place.
how much
That's
more
my
advanced
opinion
we
of how
were.
it was actually done.
Well, it's almost evidence that our history isn't what we think it is. You also showed aging, quicker aging. Are we being subjected to quicker aging? Because we have free radicals and free radical damage that's causing us to age. And there's evidence to show that perhaps we live longer in our history, and that there's evidence to show that we could probably live longer now. So are we seeing what's maybe occurring to us on, how the science behind why we're aging prematurely, or how we can turn that around and stop that premature aging?
Yes, that's a good question, Sarah. So, I did a technical paper. It's free; anyone can download it. It's titled "Life Extension to 300 Plus Years," and it shows how you can reverse age your body, and you would be put into these types of boxes. An electromagnetic field is placed around it, what I call electromagnetic stasis. And then you reverse age a certain number of years. They're probably going to have to experiment, before they fine tune it and make sure that there are no problems with it. But it is theoretically possible. There's a guy named Corey Good that some people have heard of, and he makes the extraordinary claim that he spent 20 years working in a space program called Solar Warden. And when he got out of the program, they reversed aged him 20 years and wiped his memory.
Well,
And he's got, I have no way of confirming whether or not that's
because
true.
it, but, and he's been shown to be kind of a maybe not maybe a fraud, right? But some of the science that he's talking about might be true.
I do think some of the science he's talking about is real. He does talk about the zero point and that's how the vehicles in space, their propulsion systems are based on that. And it's interesting that he says that. He probably was not aware that Colonel Corso that wrote a book called The Day After Roswell, and he passed away, I think, in 97 or 98. 60 Minutes did a really interesting interview of him on in 1997, and he went into a great deal to say, this was so classified that we didn't even classify the documents to keep it even more classified. He swore an oath to the general that he would keep it classified until after the general died. And then when the general died, he said, you can write a book or do whatever you want. So he did that. He does make the statement that we were never able to figure out how the propulsion system works. We only know it has something to do with blinking. That was his direct quote back in 1997. So he's giving us a hint as to how the propulsion system actually works. And clearly, the information that I'm providing supports his claim. So
Very
I
interesting.
encourage folks to read these ebooks that talk about both reversing aging. In fact, the title of the book is called The Single Cure. Imagine that you're in a car accident and you break your leg. An ambulance shows up with one of these boxes. You get in there, you can just put your leg inside of it. They put a stasis field around it, and your leg is turned back 1 hour in time and it's brand new again. It's just like it was an hour before the accident. There won't be a need for hospitals anymore. any condition you got, any cancer that occurs in your body, they just reverse age you and the cancer is no longer there. Any condition you are, any accident you want, you don't need a hospital anymore. You just reverse age the body to a point before the problem was there.
Wow, that's
Disease, cold, anything you want.
well, but some problems are innate to your body, so you're going to keep getting it at a certain age. So they have to just keep reverse aging to, let's say
They
that.
would just have to keep revert, other than birth defects, right? Anything that if you there was a state and time where your body was, 100% functional, you can be returned to that state.
And still maintain your memory?
I think so, yes.
That'll be an interesting thing. Okay, so the.
Because your mind is actually not physical. Your brain is physical, but your mind is not physical.
Okay, because it's we're talking about the illusion here and the math matrix, and
That's
you
right.
keep that. Okay. And also some people, there's theories, and hear your theory that the memories that we have aren't even in our mind, that there's this ether, if you will, that keeps all memories and all everything. Do you tie into that Kafka
No,
reference?
I think your mind is individualized. I think that's a key component or characteristic of all universes. If you go to a beach and try to find two grains of sand that are identical, you can't find it. In fact, you can travel all the world looking for an identical grain of sand, you won't find it. Individuality is clearly a big part of our universe. You can't find two snowflakes that are alike. Individuality
True.
is a key characteristic.
That's very true. But the memories could, even if you're individual, you still could have these memories stored, not physically here somehow. I mean, I'm just trying to think through some of this stuff. This is a brainstorming session. This isn't anything that's concrete. Okay. Because I have to think about this more. Okay, then the other thing is, if you travel the speed of light faster than the speed of light, that is time travel. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, yeah, so it actually requires it's not complicated. I've provided the math for it. In for time travel, first, I have to back up and explain the true nature of time. So, the massive present moment contains all periods of time, past, present, and future. When the universe blinks off, it all goes away. There's nothing connecting the physical construction of the last cycle with the current cycle we're in. There's nothing that connects it except for your mind and your consciousness. So, when that cycle blinks on again, all periods, past, present, and future, exist in the present moment, in the massive present moment. So when you travel through time, you're not traveling backwards or forwards. That's a misnomer. You have to travel sideways to a current timeline that exists in the past. So, for example, right now, the dinosaurs from 70 million years ago are alive and well right now. You don't travel back in time to get there. You travel sideways to a parallel timeline where they reside, and they reside there right now.
Now,
So the backwards and forwards is a misnomer.
has DARPA and HARP and these other organizations, have they, they call them portals, but it's really this, right? It's figuring out this process. Have they been able to figure out some of this?
Well, I would think so. There's a gentleman by the name of Andrew Bishago, who's an attorney in Seattle, and he described his experiences as a boy with his father, who was employed with an engineering company called Parsons Corp. And he and his father, he had discussions with his father describing eight different devices that the military had obtained. He didn't say how or where, but there were eight different technologies for traveling through time, and that his father had seen those, and Andy had experienced time travel in at least two different of those devices. I don't want to try to speak for him, but he's got many interviews on YouTube. I think what's compelling about Andrew's story is the detail. And I've talked to him on the phone, And he's very specific about these details, and the different types of technology. Specifically, that he pointed out that one of the machines that they entered had a 4 foot door opening in it, and it was I was like, so it was made for a child. He said, no, it was made for people that were a lot shorter than us. So he didn't say where they got it from. Nobody knew exactly. Maybe they weren't allowed to have that information, but a 4 foot door opening suggests a populace that's much shorter. So, but he did travel back in time. He's got some compelling photos and information, and I obviously can't confirm that it's true, but it makes for an interesting story.
All this stuff is interesting because there's science behind all this. And this is what's so fascinating to me is the science. And we just need more and more people to understand it so we can start figuring out all these things. And I know, and so do you, that they're working on it at DARPA and HAARP and some of these black budget projects. Let's talk about the dustification that you showed, those videos. Now that's rapid aging. That's what you're saying.
That's correct. Yeah, that's rapid aging. That's what we see there. So when we saw when one of those laser beams is pointed at the ground, for example, at a tree, when you rapidly age a tree, it's made of wood, so it burns. When you one of the odd things we've seen in some of these photographs is these rims, car tire rims, that appear to have turned into molten metal and just started flowing down the street. When you rapidly age magnesium, it turns liquid. It's not that it's melting, it's just rapidly aging. And so it has a different function. What's odd is much of the plastic that we saw in the vehicles. If you go to drjudywood.com, she's got pictures of the cars that were apparently burned, and they were more than a mile away from the World Trade Center. There's a row of cars, all of which were heavily burned. But you look at it and you go, but the plastic and the rubber around the
Doesn't make
windshield
sense.
wipers in there, completely intact. It's
It
like,
wouldn't make
how do you
sense.
burn and rust a car and the plastic is perfectly in good shape? That doesn't make sense. So rapid aging of plastic, still plastic. Rapidly age magnesium or other materials, and they'll burn. So,
And that you're thinking that's what we saw at Lahaina and what we're seeing at some of these other places.
yes, I am convinced that the U.S. Space Force is behind the Lahaina fires as well. And I've talked to a number of people that are involved with the tribal elder councils in Hawaii, and
Yes.
I've told him that's my opinion, that Schriever Base near Colorado Springs is where these weapons are controlled from. So
That's why
they
so much
found
of
that
this.
very helpful.
Yeah, that's why so much of this stuff doesn't make sense, is because we're just seeing advanced science and weaponry that we haven't seen before. And it just needs to come out. But they're using it against civilians, which is very scary that they're actually doing that.
Yeah.
It's not okay. And we need more people to understand it so that we can say, okay, we got to get to the top of this, the bottom of it, and get to the source and
Yeah.
stop it. Okay, and then I had to write notes during this because it's just crazy. I want to ask you about Walter Russell and Tesla and Einstein. Your work, you're really trying to figure out, and your stuff, and you showed the comparison with Leonardo da Vinci there. They're all different times. We're at a different time, but you're comparing, and I would say Walter Russell and Tesla would be more almost at the level of what you're trying to do as far as the new inventions and things. What do you think of those two? And I know there's very few people on the planet that understands Walter Russell's theories and then also disagrees with some of them. So can you he came up with the new periodic table, which most people, the people I really respect and talk to, says, oh yeah, it's way better than what everybody goes off of. What are your thoughts on those two guys and how the universe or what we're part of really is?
Well, if I had a list of all of Tesla's
Yeah, I know
inventions,
them
then
all. Yeah,
that would
stop
have
there.
given me a comparison. So, I needed to work from a list, and I wasn't trying to be completely thorough. But if somebody wants to come up with that list and make a comparison, I encourage them to do so. Yeah, it's not fair to compare the quality of a current invention with something that's 500 years old. But in terms, I was trying to make a comparison in terms of how earth, I use the term earth shattering, how radical, how revolutionary an idea is for its time. So I'm not really making a one-to-one comparison with, for example, a machine gun or a tank that he invented. I am a little bothered by the fact that he spent a lot of time working on weapons, and I hope that I haven't done that.
Who,
So,
Tesla or Walter Russell?
no, Da Vinci, I'm
Da
sorry,
Vinci. Oh, he sure
my
did.
computer.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Tesla, I am certainly not an expert on Tesla, but I have never found a comprehensive list of
Because
many
it's
of the things
hidden.
he came up with.
Yeah.
FBI apparently went in and confiscated
That's
a lot
right.
of his documents. And it's my understanding, I don't know if it's correct, that a lot of his ideas were purely theoretical and couldn't be reduced to practice. I don't know whether that's true or not. The FBI has certainly never released any of those files if they've got them. But it would be certainly helpful and interesting to learn about them
He sure did
if
when
they
it came to
will.
electricity, because he was looking at free energy, and he had those devices, and that was all buried.
Well, I provided what is essentially a free energy device. It's a single piece of paper describing a design. And it very closely matches what Dr. Stephen Greer described, that the former director of the CIA was trying to hand over to him when he was murdered. So I encourage you to read that story. It's on our website, and my website, and I can certainly provide a little bit more detail on that. But there was a microwave oven-sized device that the former director to the CIA said was able to produce electricity, and it captured it from the zero point field. Well, you'll see in my presentation, I had a picture of one of those, and you can download that diagram as well as my description of it and the background history on it. It's free at independent.academia.edu/Richard Lighthouse. It's free if somebody wants to take a look at that. But I've gotten a lot of questions from people that want to build one of these devices, and it's certainly one of the most popular things on my website. So I'm sure it's very close. I've even recommended two companies. I shouldn't say recommended. I've put out the information that there's two companies here in the United States that make signal generators and harmonic mixers, or it's called a harmonic mixer, of these very high terahertz frequencies that can generate the signal next necessary to make one of these devices. And that's the most difficult part in making this device, is that initial signal generation and then synchronizing. But the synchronization could be random as well, and I mentioned that. So once you get a signal generator that will produce that frequency right around 2.2 terahertz, possibly even the base signal at 1.1 terahertz, it'll produce free electricity. So the cost is the initial cost of the equipment, and then it'll produce as much electricity as you want for as
Yeah,
long
that's
as you
very,
want.
yeah,
And
that's very interesting.
the great thing that you can take it to the moon, you can take it to Mars,
That's
and you've
right.
got electrical generation.
The Albert Abel, I've had him on my show multiple times, and they were working on a free energy battery, and they had the physics from the University of Colorado. It was patented, it was proven, it was all these things, but man, was he having a hard time getting funding, and they just don't want us to go there. I learned a lot from him. I had multiple conversations. I talked to him on the phone many times, and all of his problems just trying to do it. It was such a promising, because it was all proven and it was working. We could all heat our house with this battery that forever, lasts pretty much. So there is the we will have free energy. They don't want to disrupt the cash flows, the way the world works right now. And so we have to, that has to be disrupted. There has to be other ways for us to survive and not have to, there's other means of having services. So it's very interesting here. I also want to talk to you about Walter Russell, because many people, you said to me that you don't totally agree with him, but he was closer, his understanding was closer than Einstein's were, for sure. Can you explain that?
Yes. Well, one of the famous quotes was from Einstein when they were trying to brainstorm and come up with an idea that would go beyond relativity, that would unite sort of both the macro world of physics with the micro world, the quantum world. And they couldn't figure out. But one of the quotes that Einstein made is, if the idea isn't absurd at first, there's no hope for it, because they tried all the ideas that could remotely make sense, and none
That's
of
a
them
good
worked.
statement. That's a great statement. Yeah.
But he spent the last 30 years of his life looking for the prize that he was looking for, was the unification of the four fundamental forces. And I do believe that I've provided that. It's actually not complicated math. It's sines and cosines. And another statement from Einstein was, he said, I'll know when I have the math, because it will be so simple that I can explain it to a child. And in fact, it is. The math that involves the construction of our universe is actually, it's not even math, it's a mathematical pattern. And I published a book on the 1024 QAM that's used to describe elementary particles, the entire elementary particle field. And so the forces are analog, and the particles are discrete or digital.
Yeah,
And
that's what
that's the
Shear
connection
Edwards
between
says.
the analog universe.
No, keep going. That's a connection. I don't want to cut you
No,
off.
so yeah. So the understanding the elementary particle field and how they're related, it is a mathematical pattern. Unlike the chemical periodic table, it's not entirely predictable. If you go back to the late 1800s, they
Right.
missed many of the elements because they couldn't figure out the pattern. And they had to, even after discovering many of these very rare elements, they had holes that they knew about, and they couldn't explain it, because it's not a mathematical pattern. But the elementary particle field actually is a true mathematical pattern. So it's very predictable and involves statistics and probabilities. For example, an electron has 16 probabilities, four charges and four spins. So you have 16 probabilities for any elementary particle. And the positron, for example, is not antimatter. It's a probability of an electron, and it's ordinary matter. So I think you can tell from that graph that I presented, the universes of matter and antimatter can never meet. So there is no antimatter in our universe. That's another misnomer that's common in the physics field, that they're capturing and isolating antimatter. It's not antimatter. So,
Interesting. Okay. Well, Ion Mitchell, who's a scientist that I really respect too, and he just doesn't even use the periodic table. That he says it's good enough for what most people do, but it's not precise enough, and nature is precise. And the Walter Russell's periodic table is precise, and that's why it's so much easier to, I mean, it's just better to use if you're actually going to be creating things. Okay, and it gets out. I mean, most people don't even understanding Walter Russell's work is so such a small percentage of people that even begun to understand it, let alone debate it. So it's probably over the head of almost everybody, but I'm sure that that's watching this. But there are physicists and mathematicians that really are going, okay, I want to start understanding this stuff because I know it's going to change our world. Okay, I have a question for you. Ever since I interviewed you last time, I've been thinking about it ever since. You said that we have a resonant frequency that all of us has, that's a unique identifier for all of us, and they're tracking us through here with satellite, so they can track every single one of us. And so you don't need all these injections. You don't need, they're already tracking everybody through this unique identifier. Now, you were saying they're using scalar waves. Are they using? Okay, is scalar technology already, who's using it? And is it, because it's not commercially available and not being used, but they're using it regularly now in DARPA and HARP and some of these military projects?
Oh yes, absolutely. So one of the interesting things about scalar waves is it'll go right through water, and you can pick up the signal. In fact, that's the best way to identify a scalar wave, because if you've got like 12 feet of water and you're sending a signal on one end, and it can get through 12 feet of water, there's only one thing it could be, and that would be a scalar wave. Any other type of electromagnetic signal is going to be completely absorbed by the water. So, for example, the divers that go into a nuclear tank around the nuclear reactor core, even when it's operating, they're told just stay 6 feet, take your camera down there, take all the pictures, make sure there's no leaks, there's nothing that looks funny or overheating. Just stay 6 feet away from that reactor core. That 6 feet of water will protect you. And that's the truth. So a scalar wave, however, will go right through there. So I can guarantee you that there's a secret classified project where submarines underwater are communicating, and they're using scalar waves to do it. Everybody thought that submarines got to surface before you can get them a signal or information. That's not true. I'm very confident the U.S. Navy has been using scalar waves to communicate between submarines for many years. And that's probably a closely guarded secret. Scalar waves are used to penetrate. You can penetrate through many buildings. The U.S. Space Force has the massive underground tunnel network that's about a quarter of a mile underground. They've placed some of these microwave weapons, beam weapons, in these tunnels underground and are firing up at people on the surface. So it's going through a quarter mile of solid rock and water. Only a scalar wave can do that.
And
You're not going to do that with an ordinary microwave.
it can communicate across the universe instantaneously. I mean, it's just this, and right? Is that, am I wrong with that?
Well, no, I've heard that statement. I obviously haven't tested it, but that would be quite interesting. Dr. Greer is famous for saying that the scalar waves are the scalar weapons are instantaneous, so they travel faster than the speed of light. So I'm not interested in building any weapons. I'm
That's
just
right.
interested in
But we do need to
improving
understand
society and
this.
raising our standard of living.
Well, we do need to understand this because it looks like we're under attack. And but if they have all these weapons and they haven't used them yet, it tells me that the bad guys don't really have control of all these weapons either. And they're planning, there's something else going on here. I've been thinking about this deeply because it's been really bothering me, this, depopulation agenda, and how does this tie? And if we have scalar waves, and then they're putting heavy metals in our bodies, because the heavy metals with this, I don't even know if, with the heavy metals with with EMFs and like they can pretty much do anything, create any disease. They can kill us instantaneously, right? They can age us instantaneously and just zap us out, right? I mean, the weapons are so advanced, but they're not doing that. So why are they doing things slowly when they could just do that? Do you know what I mean? It gives me hope, is what it does. It gives me some hope here. It also is very scary because if they wanted to, they could.
I would say the agenda is to get control. They may want to do a population reduction, but the first goal is control. If you don't have control, then reducing the population isn't going to help you. So I think their priorities are control first, and then they'll worry about how to get rid of the people that are a problem. But that's
Well,
just my opinion. I'm not a politician.
I don't think the politicians are really have the power behind a lot of it. I don't know. I just this kind of advanced weaponry. Okay, and so when I look at all this stuff, it seems like they're killing people slowly. And why are they doing that? When these are just questions I have that just don't make sense. Why are they killing people slowly when they could just do it quickly? Or are they using that as a means test to see who are the strong, because they are eugenicists, right? They want the smartest, best people to survive. So are they using this as a means to the people who are smart enough to figure this stuff out are the ones who are going to survive? I mean, I'm really trying to, none of this makes sense to me. So I'm just asking, so I'm sure you've asked yourself some of these questions because it's not rational.
Well, John McAfee and Jeff Epstein weren't killed slowly. So I think it depends on who you are and how much of a problem you are.
Well, Epstein wasn't, some people say Epstein's still alive. He wasn't, because the guy on the gurney wasn't him.
I don't know. I don't know.
You're not an expert. That's it's I'm asking, we're just having a conversation here. That's fine. You're a scientist and you don't have all the answers, but as far as people go, people aren't rational. So all this stuff, and then there's a cult behind it and some weird stuff. And so that's why I'm just trying to understand. And I do know like the heavy metals that are in our system is killing people, but it's doing it slowly. And so why are they dumping all this stuff on us? Why are they putting graphene oxide into our system? Because it'll, you know, it's the it can turn us into a network, you know, a node on the network. Why are they doing all that when they have these scalar waves? And or is it there's groups that aren't that advanced and then there's more groups that are advanced and they're it's not the same group of people. That's what I'm looking at, because this really advanced stuff with scalar waves are they where they understand their resonant frequency, they can do anything they want at any time. I mean, that's almost God kind of control. And I think there's a God beyond that. I do. So everybody's saying that I'm not as I really do. I think this is, but that is like really powerful. And then there's this other stuff. It almost like this other group that doesn't have access to this real advanced stuff. That's my theory right now. I don't know if I'm
Well,
right.
I think that, for example, that they really felt that the mind control was su sufficiently advanced, and they rolled it out, and it certainly works on some of the population.
A lot of them, yes.
But you wouldn't need a blackmail program like Jeff Epstein's. If the mind control worked on everybody, why would you need a blackmail program?
You
So
wouldn't need
clearly,
that.
they already admitted that it doesn't work all the time.
Well,
And
and if it,
so,
and some of these advanced science that we're talking about, if they are that advanced, they don't even need the Epstein's and this mind. I mean, they just send frequencies for emotions into people. But Sherry Edwards says, well, the nice part is that there's it's more complex than we think they think. It's not a simple thing. There's multiple, there might be 20 different frequencies. We're very unique individuals. Like you said, with a grain of sand, there's many different things that work with every grain of sand. Or many not different things that work with it. Every grain of sand is different. Every snowflake is different. So then you have to have to deal with it would be different.
Well, I think that if you've ever taken the Myers-Briggs personality test, that was very popular a few decades ago. And now they've rolled out sort of a modified Myers-Briggs that's far more complex. And the original Myers-Briggs was very binary. Either you can be thinking or you can be judgmental. And it was a very binary decision, even though you might have, 48% thinking and 52% judgmental, they just don't, lumped you into the judgmental care. So I think just analyzing personality types, there's so many of those. I don't know what the, and I'm certainly not an expert in that field, but I think that's certainly one of their characteristics, or one of the characteristics they're looking for, is to be able to identify individuals and put them in a category, put them in a personality type, and say, this person is vulnerable to this. This is what that matters to them. And we can know all that about them because we know they're this personality type. So they're trying to label and categorize all these people in the population, and in hopes that that's going to make it easier to control and manipulate people. But I think they're a long way. I think they underestimate that people's personalities can change over time.
That's
And
right. And the end people aren't, because I know when I did the Myers-Briggs back way back then, they flagged me and had me come over and said, you're like in the middle, you know, this is your like they couldn't categorize me. And it was kind of funny. And depending on what I take it, I'd flip back and forth. I'm INTJ, right? Thinking, yeah, which is kind of a unicorn anyways, but especially for women. But then sometimes I'd be an INT, okay, the F, the feeling one. It'd go back and forth. And then I'd go, and so they didn't know how to categorize me. I remember them flagging me for that and having talking to me, one of the women that was running it. Which is funny because of this, and then I started thinking about that stuff. I'm like, wait a minute, this stuff isn't quite accurate. This is all BS. I mean, it's not all BS. It's pretty accurate, but not 100%, like you're saying.
So,
Yeah,
well,
well.
I think that's one of the things that they're trying to develop, and I don't think it's been very successful.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They can't do it across the entire population without missing a whole bunch. Well, this is absolutely fantastic. This is very interesting. It got me thinking in a lot of directions. Actually, it gave me some hope because, especially with some of those questions where I'm like, I know this really advanced stuff is out there and they aren't using it or don't understand it or something, which is hopeful. That tells me that the ones who really are working on this aren't necessarily the ones who are implementing some of these weapons. So that's my thinking right now. So, okay, where can people follow you and see more of your stuff?
So we've got I've got my website, ourlighthouse.com. A lot of free technical papers can be downloaded there, and also at academia.edu. It's actually independent.academia.edu/Richard Lighthouse, and I've got a bunch of technical papers on there. All of them are free. I've got videos up there as well. So yeah, if folks are interested, I encourage you to go out there. I'm not trying to make money on this. I'm just trying to get this information out. I think it'll help a lot of people. I think there's some great inventions that are
That's
really
right.
forthcoming very soon. And I provided as much information I can to get those developments going.
Thank you so much. I've been looking forward to this interview for a while. So thank you so much. And we might have to have you back to dive into a couple of these other areas.
Okay. Well, glad to come back, Sari. Thanks for having me.